Hello and welcome to A Vague Idea. This is a comedy trivia podcast. I'm Nate Regolia. Each week, we subject our guests to a list of topics to find out if they have a vague idea. And this week, we're talking about the bone-crunching, hard-hitting, concussion-inducing, revenue-generating world of football. And we have two fantastic guests who I have not asked if they've ever played football themselves, so we'll ask them after I introduce them. Our first guest is an author who has written for Salon, Electric Literature, Guernica, The Brooklyn Rail, and others. His debut novel, a satirical thriller entitled Pax Americana, was published in 2017, and a second novel, tentatively titled Twilight of the Gods, is nearing completion. Maybe we'll ask him about that. We'll see how close to completion it is. A native of Northern Virginia, Kurt Baumeister holds an MFA from Emerson College and is an editor with 713 books. Kurt, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Nate. Appreciate it.
So thanks for being on. Have you ever played football before? What's your relationship?
I've played little football. I'd never played formal football. I played like sandlot football, you know, some tackle, whatnot, but mostly just a fan of watching it.
Right on. Yeah. I have
a very young age.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think that's really where football gets a hold of you, right? Did you watch with your family? Was it like a family activity?
I watched with my dad a little bit. I think the first game I saw was like, it was in the 70s. It was like Miami. I remember Paul Warfield was still with him. Oh, and yeah. I can't even remember who they were playing, but sort of contemporaneous to that is the first game that I really remember solidly is a Redskins Cowboys game. And that was when the Redskins won, but that was when they were the hometown team, obviously. But that was when I started rooting for the Cowboys.
Oh, wow.
I'm always kind of like going against the flow, it seems. So,
well, I mean, yeah, there's nothing more against the flow right now than liking the Cowboys. So you're doing well.
Jared, man, they signed Dak. That's all I've got to say. I'm psyched about that.
No, I respect that they signed him because he deserves to be invested in. I mean, if you're going to spend all that money on Tony Romo for all those years, like you better spend it on Dak. So.
Don't diss Romo. Romo is good, man.
Oh, yeah. I'm not dissing him. I'm just saying, like, you're going to give him that money. You got to give it to Dak,
I hear
too.
You, man.
Yeah.
It looked like it was really about to explode on him, too, when they didn't have Dak signed. And it was like they thought they were being smart by, you know, taking last season and making him play through it. And then he gets a freak injury only a few games in, and they don't have the data point even to say, oh yeah, he played great, let's give him this big contract. It was just, I mean, it's classic Jerry, you know?
Oh yeah. Like, well, and in all honesty, at this point in the way football works, you do not have the luxury to track data points. You just have to go, this player has it, especially with a quarterback. It's like, they've got it. And even if this is the most they give us, or if they fall off, they're still going to be better than 50% of the guys we draft, even if we draft him in the first round.
I mean, Jesus, like Jared Goff, I mean, that dude, like he's got more than 50 million of dead money hitting teams this year. He's got like 30 hitting the Rams and 20 hitting the Lions or the reverse. It's like, you know, you just do the best you can. I mean, Dak's good enough. He might never be, you know, he might never be the best quarterback in the league, but he's more than good enough to win a Super Bowl if the rest of the team is good. I mean, Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, yeah. A 49-year-old John Elway won a Super Bowl, so I'm not... he was actually probably just a little younger than me at the time.
You see those commercials sobering. He does for for his hands now, the Dupuytren's?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, those are
I frequently find myself going, oh, is that the hand you used to hit your wife with? But that's okay.
Oh, God, was he one of those? Oh.
Yeah, yeah, his wife divorced him. It was a whole... I have some bitterness against John Elway at this point.
But, oh, yeah, shit, but that's right.
But I am I am a Broncos fan by pedigree. I mean, I have photos of my family where we're all dressed in Broncos regalia and getting ready for the game, and I'm like 4 years old. So,
And I'm pretty sure my first tastes of beer came from the remnants in cans after my parents had watched a Broncos game and me just kind of picking them up and sipping when I was just able to walk. So there's a lot of love there. But yeah, Elway's not really on the top of my list for myriad reasons. Our second guest is an American writer known for his novels all about Lulu, West of Here, The Revised Fundamentals of Caregiving, and This Is Your Life, Harriet Chance. His work, often distinguished by its emotional resonance and offbeat humor, has been compared by critics to a variety of authors, most notably J.D. Salinger, Charles Dickens, T.C. Boyle, and John Irving. Sherman Alexie once called our guest the most honest white man alive, and I guess we're going to test that today on the show to find out if he's really that honest. He also has a book coming out this June called Legends of the North Cascades. Jonathan Evison, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
So we were just talking to Kurt about his love of the Dallas Cowboys. So what's your relationship to football? Who's your team? Did you play? What's your deal?
I'm a Seattle Seahawks fan and have been since 1976. I did play football. I didn't play organized football. I didn't play Pee Wee or Pop Warner, but I grew up in a rural island where we had a big neighborhood, a lot of kids in the neighborhood. And we go to Goodwill. We had shoulder pads. We had helmets. We built giant PVC field goal posts. And we had two fields, and there was two games in my neighborhood. There was my field down because we had an acre. And we played with a regular football or sometimes a Nerf. And then there was the Hayashitas up the hill. And they had wood goalposts, and they played with one of those Itza footballs. So that was kind of slumming it for us. You remember the Itza? Yeah. It was like pre-Nerf. It was that really rubbery, bouncy Itza football, IPVA, I think. Yeah. So we had two games. So we played a lot of football, a lot of baseball, a lot of basketball.
Right on.
And also even a little ice hockey and tennis shoes when the pond would freeze over. But that wasn't our favorite game. Our favorite game was you'd have a guy on each side of the pond, and then one guy would ride his BMX bike across the ice, and the guys on each side would slide this gigantic pipe wrench across the ice to try to knock the guy on his ass. And it was menacing when it would come spinning at you, because it'd be like,
yeah, dude.
You see the big head of that thing coming at you, and you're trying to time it. You can't really stop. You got to kind of go for it. And, we didn't wear helmets for that, only football. So you get knocked on your ass pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds positively medieval, dude. Like, yeah. I mean, literally. It was, like, it was jousting. Awesome. Did you ever do bike jousting at all?
Nah, we did a lot of jumping of other human beings, the Evel Knievel stuff, like where your buddies lay in the back and, whoever's last in line gets it in the stomach, kind of.
We had a bout of back at Tulane, back in the school days, we used to do skateboard jousting, we had the pledges do skateboard jousting in the top hall. And the top hall was double doors at the end.
Huh? Meister, you were a frat boy?
Yeah, I was in the stoner frat.
Oh, God.
Which is a contradiction in terms.
Okay. Yeah, but I was in the stoner frat. You would have liked the frat I was in, John. But yeah, we had these double doors would open, and sometimes we would like bowl weights out of it, because the balcony was right there, and if you bowled them, like, they'd go out in the street. And but then one day one of the brothers did that, and he hit a car, and fortunately nobody was injured, but that was the end of the weight bowling. And the skateboard jousting had a similar end. There was a minor injury that kind of brought an end to that whole joyous game.
I mean, that sounds good compared to a lot of pretty much all the ends of things that happen at frats now are hazing results in death. So good show that it's just like a car and a minor injury.
It's true. Frats get a bad name. But hey, there was a lot of beer. So
there's good to be had in these things when they're guided properly.
Nate's not gonna judge you, Kurt. No. Nate's not gonna judge you.
Just the listener might.
But Johnny is,
but not me.
Fucking frat boy.
Jesus, yeah.
We used to go to, when I was a little punk rocker, when I was like 14, 15, we went to frat house parties just to get kicked out and get in fights.
Nice. Oh, yeah. You got to. John's got, man, he's got some stories about when he was singing punk, man. Or do you say singing?
No.
Scrouting, sheeming?
No, just front man.
Front man. Okay.
Yeah. It's an ethos. It's not an activity.
All right, bring on some football.
Okay, woo-hoo! Here we go. So we're going to jump in to the opening question. And you will both just feel free to answer this in a free-flowing manner.
Do we have to buzz or anything, or just
yeah, no buzz.
Oh, yeah. Talking? Yeah, you can just, once I finish, you can both kind of talk about this one. I will prompt both of you as we get into the specific questions. So my opening question is this. Football is clearly now America's game, having surpassed baseball. Do we believe that's because we've culturally lost our appreciation for peaceful, genteel pastimes while fully embracing the brutality of war? What do you guys think of that?
I think it's faster.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's faster. Go ahead.
And, you know, there's 16 games. It's 10% of as many games, you know. It's easier to be informed as a fan and, you know, it's easier to bandwagon.
I think I just think it matches modern America better, probably in a lot of bad ways, that there's a lot more violence to it. There's a lot more sex to it. The cheerleaders, you know. I mean, the ball girls are nice and everything at the baseball game, but they're nothing compared to the NFL cheerleaders.
The Philly fanatic is not turning heads. So
yeah, no, he's not. Or the presidents that run around.
There's something kind of evocative about that big honker, though, I gotta say.
Yeah.
I mean, is it a mouth or is it a nose? Not that I'm picky, but
but it matters logistically, if nothing else.
I used to know this guy, Wayne Doba. He was like a Theatre Cinzani kind of guy. And he was, you know, San Francisco's got a long history of hating mascots. They've never had mascots. But this is, I guess it's probably the mid-80s or something. They tried out a mascot, and it was called the Crazy Crab. And Wayne Doba, my friend, was the Crazy Crab. And, man, it was brutal, man. He had great support. I mean, people threw fucking bags of piss at him and batteries, and you know, I mean, it was just a fucking exercise in humiliation. I mean, he would be, you know, he'd be on his moped just like fucking dodging, you know, riding across the fucking infield dodging, you know, D batteries and stuff like that,
like he's trying to clean up a driving range.
Wow,
wild. Yeah, okay. So I mean, I the other thing I would add to the reason why I think football is America's game is mainly, you can't watch baseball pretty much at all unless you're at the stadium. And it requires an incredible time investment. Who's working in our, you know, present capitalist society of toil is able to go, oh, hey, every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, I have from 1 until 4 available. And I'll just go to the stadium and sit in the sun. Like, you don't have
a lot of people. Yeah.
Football is.
Yeah, but I gotta disagree with you on this. I like radio. I like theater of the imagination. So I enjoy baseball most on the radio. You know what I mean? And so
that's a good point.
Yeah. If you work in a shop, like if you're a mechanic or you work in a muffler shop or something like that, you just got that radio on all day long. Right. You know, I mean, that's how I was able, when I wasn't going to games. The radio was always on. And that's why, you know, my first book, All About Lulu, it was kind of a love letter to Vin Scully. But that's only because the novel, whom I love, but
yeah,
it's only because the novel was set in LA, but it was really all the hyperbole, all the love I was given to Vin Scully really belonged to Dave Niehaus, who was the voice of the Mariners. And essentially, like, to me, the voice of God. I mean, I listened to that guy for 25 years, 180 times a year, because I listened to spring training even. I mean, I heard that guy's voice so many thousands of times. Mm. It's like he's the only celebrity that I ever met where I got nervous, and I met a billion. You know, I got a ton of friends that are like rock stars or whatever, and I met been on a lot of movie sets, used to work in Hollywood, so I met tons of celebrities. But Dave Niehaus was the only guy that I ever got nervous around, because I was just, I mean, it was like God. It was God. It was the voice, you know what I mean? And because I got to sit in the booth with him a couple times when I had a radio career for a while, and my we were I was Outrageous Talk Radio. 100.7 The Buzz. You know, it was like Hot Talk Radio. I used to go on before Tom Likas, that human cockroach.
Were you were you a liberal then or what?
I've always been a liberal. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. Well, he used to be a liberal. I mean, you know what I mean? Tom Likas got his start. He was like a liberal pundit. And then it all became about tits and, you know, really women are just gold diggers and all that crap. But I got to sit a few times up with Dave Niehaus because our radio station was part of the same group. And man, that was the only time I got nervous around anybody because he was literally like the voice of God to me. I mean, so many from my childhood, from 8 years old, all through adolescence until, you know, when I was, you know, 30 years old at the time. It was like, I don't know, do the math. It's a lot of hours spent listening to that voice.
Yeah.
And he was one of the best.
Well, that's a huge point that when you listen to somebody consistently, especially especially for baseball, but for any sport, really, like there's a father figure energy that comes off of that. There's a power that comes off of that. And honestly, I think you made a beautiful point, which is that the best way to watch a baseball game, if you're not at it, is to listen to it and not watch it at all, which, because, you know.
And the best way to get to know the announcer is announces for a crappy team. You know what I mean? The Mariners were bad for so long. When you're down 7-0, that's when you get to really hear that. You know what I mean? That's
somebody's going to fill it in with like, oh, yeah, one time.
Enough, no hope of catching up. And then they start filling. You learn a little bit about them.
Yeah. Yeah, you start hearing the story about having a drink with Rod Carew one time or whatever it is. Yeah, fantastic. Great job, both of you, on the opening question. I'm going to give you each 2 points. And we're going to hop into round number one. Kurt, we're going to start with you. Do you have a vague idea about Newt Rockne?
Newt Rockne. Yeah, I do. You know, I'm sort of thinking I'd probably be better off bullshitting this, but he was the storied coach of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish back in the black and white glory days of football, maybe in the 20s or 30s or something. And he was the one who did Reagan play in the movie called The Newt Rockne Story or something like that, where Reagan played the Gipper. And it was Newt Rockne, the one that wanted them to win one for the Gipper. So that would be my guess.
All right. Yeah, that you're absolutely correct with the Notre Dame and everything.
That's exactly the amount of information I would have had to offer as well. I don't know if I'd have gone into Reagan, but yeah, well done, Kurt.
Thank you.
Johnny, anything to add? Anything you want to add? Make some stuff up.
He said it all. That's all I know about him. I could talk about Newt Hampson, but, you know. Different time, different show.
Who's Knut Hamsun?
Yeah.
Knut Hamsun, the Norwegian novelist, man. Growth of the Soil, Hunger, Vagabonds.
No.
Made his kids call him the Great Man.
The Great Man? No.
Yeah, he's an asshole. Yeah,
that's good
parenting.
He had parenting.
Like 8 kids, and they made him call him the Great Man. So I make my nephews call me the Great Man, just for a joke. I'm kind of known in the family as the Great Man.
As the Great Man. Oh, boy.
Newt Rockne did coach Notre Dame. Died at 43, which is a thing that I did not know. I'd heard that name so many times, mainly because I believe he's the first coach to in formal college football say, let's try a forward pass. So he was that guy. We're gonna try throwing the ball across the line of scrimmage and see what happens.
So before he did that, it was like allowed technically, but nobody tried it.
There wasn't a rule against it, and it was just everybody did shuttle passes and running plays and stuff.
Because it was like rugby.
Right.
Yeah. My grandfather played running back in Notre Dame in the, probably in the 30s. I don't know if he played under Rockne.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because we have an old photo of him that's, you know, the old leather helmets and everything. And it's him. And somebody's gone in and captioned every single player's name around the photo. So you can see my grandfather, you know, barreling, basically just kind of doing a sweep is pretty much the only play that they're showing there. But yeah, wild stuff.
I love the Coen Brothers movie, The Leatherheads. With George Clooney and John Krasinski and Renee Zellweger. It's like it really evokes that era. I mean, it's pro football, but it's just great. All the trick plays and just the total lack of rules. I mean, it's like this weird like amalgam of like something real and developed with rules and something that's like complete anarchy. And it's just like changing on, you know, like a, almost like a play to play basis.
It's like Calvin Ball at some point, right? I one of the things when I was putting this episode together, I was trying to come up with rules throughout the history of football. And what I discovered was that is a fool's errand to try to do anything to pin down what the rules were at any given time. I can't even do it now.
Yeah, I mean, if one of you gentlemen can tell me what a completion actually is, like how.
Yeah,
the,
tell me
you
about
know,
it, dude.
What the fuck is a football move? I don't
football
know.
Football play, whatever that is.
Yeah.
The officials can't even agree on it now. Yeah. There's something like 1,200 rules or something.
I mean, they didn't even have good enough rules for how much the ball should be inflated or whether it should be inflated or any of that shit. I mean, it's just, oh, well, but we still love it. I mean, that's what's kind of crazy about it. It's almost like football is all just about the, it's almost like it's all about the physicality. It almost doesn't matter if there are rules, you know, like in a way.
I kind of think so. Well, great job. Great job on Newt Rockne. I'm giving you each 1 point.
Why do I get a point? I didn't answer anything that was his. I don't want that point.
You came up with a good story.
I ain't taking points.
We'll see how it turns out at the end.
Yeah. I'm merely a conduit for the points the universe distributes. I don't have any control.
I've got no participation awards here.
You're gonna win anyway, John. So
John, we're gonna go with you on round number two. Do you have a vague idea about the USFL?
Yeah, God, what era was that? 80s, 90s, maybe. I get it all confused. Arena football, Canadian football, the USFL. I was gonna say Doug Flutie, but that was the CFL. Yes, I do have a vague idea about it. That's exactly what I have. Is a vague idea about it.
It was an era of football.
And I just gave it to you.
All right.
I have a better idea than that, I think.
Great. Yeah, Kurt, talk about it.
Because I'm slightly older. So I remember it's from like the late 80s. And I remember Herschel Walker played there out of like they had a couple when the league started, they had a couple of huge players that they were able to sign. One of them was Herschel Walker. One of them was Steve Young. And it went on for 3 or 4 years. I remember Donald Trump was an owner of, or the owner of the New Jersey team, which should have told us all we needed to know about the USFL. But I don't remember a lot of the, I mean, I don't remember watching the games or anything. The other thing I remember was, I think there were like, I don't know, were there like 8 or 10 teams? And I think Flutie, I'm not sure Flutie was just in Canadian. He might have actually been in the USFL too, briefly. Yeah, that's about it.
That was great. Yeah, the USFL was from 1983 until 1985. They were supposed to have a 1986 season, never happened because the league folded. There was a total of 18 teams. They were a direct competitor to the NFL. And some of the players involved. So we had Herschel Walker, as you mentioned. Doug Flutie played for the New Jersey Generals. You had Mike Rozier played for Pittsburgh, for the Pittsburgh Maulers. even former Broncos offensive tackle Gary Zimmerman and Jim Kelly and Steve Young all played in the USFL.
Oh, so Jim Kelly played for the Houston Gamblers, didn't he?
That's right. Yes, the Houston Gamblers. You also had the Memphis Showboats, the Los Angeles Express. And notoriously, Donald Trump was trying to buy into the New Jersey Generals, then bailed out because he heard that the Baltimore Colts might be available. So he's going to try to buy the Colts, couldn't get that done either, then came back, got a stake in the Generals, and then basically torpedoed the league because he thought he could ego his way into competing with the NFL or forcing a merger, and neither of those things worked because he's a terrible businessman. So
sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, great job on the USFL. Kurt, I'm going to give you 3 points. That was a lot of information.
Oh.
And John, 1 point.
Solid.
So now we're going to play our first game. Our first game is titled Which AFL? Because there was, of course, the American Football League, and the Arena Football League.
Oh.
So I am going to give each of you two team names, and you're going to have to tell me whether that was an American Football League team or Arena Football League team. So John, let's start with you. The Los Angeles Kiss. Arena Football or American Football League?
Arena Football.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, well. Do you have any details around that to share?
No.
Okay.
Just a vague idea.
The Los Angeles Kiss were the Arena Football team owned by Gene Simmons. It tracks. And that's fucking kooky, right? Okay, Kurt, the Los Angeles Avengers. Was that an Arena Football League team or an American Football League team?
You know, you would think that since Johnny just had the Los Angeles Kiss and they were Arena, that I guess it would have to be American Football League, but I feel like I'm open to I feel like I might be opening myself up to a trick, but I'll say American Football League.
Oh man, like so many Statue of Liberty plays, you have been opened up to a trick. It is another Arena Football team. Angeles Avengers.
Good trick. It's a good one.
John, the New York Titan. Was that
American Football League?
Very good. Absolutely correct. Yeah. Turned into the New York Jets. All right, Kurt, so you get the last one. The New York City Hawks.
I'm going to say American Football League.
Think about it. It's like Princess Bride with you. You got to be, is he trying to trick me out? Or is this real?
I'm going to say American Football League.
I am a Sicilian, actually, too, which is
oh, my God.
For that reference. You said American or you said Arena?
I said American.
Okay. It was Arena. Yeah, the City Hawks were an Arena Football team.
Here I come, Von Meister. I'm coming for you.
So, in the spirit of competition, you're both tied at 6 points right now because John got two there and Kurt zero. I'm sorry. So let's hop into round number three. And John, we'll start with you. Do you have a vague idea about Mike, Sam, and Will?
Mike, Sam, and Will. Those are the three linebacker positions.
Hell yes.
Weak side linebacker is Will. Strong side linebacker is Sam.
Very good. Very good. All right, Kurt,
wasn't
anything
there a
to
linebacker?
Add?
Can I add something in and maybe get a point out
absolutely.
Of it?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. That's
wasn't the there a linebacker named Michael?
Dungeon for points, by my
there spirit. You go. You know it, baby. Wasn't there a linebacker named Michael Sam who was, like, pretty great in college, but he was gay? And that was a big deal. And maybe this was 10, 15 years ago. And he never made it in the NFL.
He was.
Sounds familiar, but was he a linebacker or a DB?
He was a defensive end. He's currently only 31 years old.
Right.
But yeah, he didn't.
No extra points.
He was a seventh round pick. But no, you're going to get a point because I like
you. A point for the name. What about Sam's
for
Club?
Initiative.
Can I get a point for that? Isn't there a store called Sam's Club? Can I get a point? Come on.
There you go.
We're 6-6 here.
Sam's Club.
For that.
All right.
So, what's interesting is there is also a Jack. So you can say Will or Jack.
Will or
in that,
Jack.
In that line of things. So Mike is really the only one. Sam, Will, and Jack can be kind of interchanged, but obviously Mike, Sam, and Will are the ones that we all know because we've either watched football or we've even played like Madden, and Madden will give you plays that say like, oh, you know, Mike Blitz on it, right? So yeah, great job. So 2 points for John, 1 point for Kurt.
You guy, dude.
What's
he
got, that?
He really gets a point for Sam.
Yeah. I'm doing
under protest.
Give me my point. You're ahead. You're still ahead.
Wasn't there a linebacker named Mike?
Yeah, Mike.
Linebacker named Mike.
There
I'm
were
pretty
many.
Sure Mike
like
Vrabel was one.
Here?
Mike Vrabel. Hey,
well,
good.
A bunch. Yeah. I should get several points because there was a bunch of
linebackers.
Gonna,
named Nate, Mike. Yeah, I think you're going to have to give Evison another point.
Well, I'll give it to him later. It'll be fine.
Okay.
Don't worry.
Yeah,
you'll get your makeup point later on. We'll do this the way
Mike
the NFL
Morgan.
Will.
Mike
right.
Morgan. He was a linebacker.
Yeah.
He was.
All right, let's hop into round number four. So, Kurt, do you have a vague idea about O.J. Simpson?
Oh, O.J. Simpson, man, the juice. Buffalo, first 2,000-yard rusher. Yep. not
Hertz sure rent a car, baby.
I'm not. Yeah, I know. Hold on. Yeah, the Hertz rent a car. He's running through the airport, hurdling suitcases. He was Monday Night Football for a while. He was kind of, you know, as men go, he was sort of America's sweetheart. But then what happened?
Well,
I'll tell you. I woke up one morning and the story was O.J. Simpson is on the run from the cops and they think he may have been involved in his wife's murder and he may have cut her head off. And is he guilty? Is he not guilty? He's in a white Bronco driving away with a former offensive lineman and Robert Shapiro and
Rosie Greer.
Yeah, I don't know about Rosie Greer, but
was it Rosie Robert Greer who was driving?
No, it was Rosie Al was Cowlings. Al Cowlings.
Oh, yeah. Al Cowlings. Rosie Greer kept visiting him in prison or whatever.
Maybe. I could see that. Rosie Greer was, whatever happened to Rosie Greer? Can we do an aside here and go out of the scoring round?
Oh, yeah.
Generally ask what happened to Rosie Greer.
I feel like that's a great book title, Whatever Happened to Rosie Greer. Yeah.
Do you know? Either of you guys?
I'm looking.
Mr.
I'm looking
Edison? It
up. The last I heard of him was like corresponding with OJ.
Didn't he knit? Wasn't he like big into knitting back before knitting was anything that a manly man could do? I think maybe he was. Yeah, he was quite a character. But OJ, you know, and then obviously OJ is at the center of certainly probably the most famous trial of the 20th century. Well, other than Nuremberg.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, yeah. More cameras than OJ's.
I was living in LA for that.
Really?
Yeah. I used to see Johnny Cochran all the time.
Were you there for the riots?
Stoplight. I saw him like four times at the stoplight of La Brea and Melrose. He must have lived in, you know, somewhere near me. And I'd see him in his car, the back of his car. It was during the trial. The back of his car would always be full of balloons from all the admirers. All the juice fans would
give
him, you know, helium balloons. Wow. So like, yeah, they'd be sticking to his afro and stuff.
That's wild.
OJ was what the scouts like to call a long strider. He was more of a track and field guy, actually. Yeah. He was no Jim Brown, no Barry Sanders. He was a long strider, man. You got that guy in the open field and he was like he was a track guy.
Downhill. Yeah.
If it does not fit, you must acquit.
Yeah, John.
Like the guy, there was such a pathetic display. I mean, I can make the glove look small, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I've got a lot of experience with that.
So, yeah. John, anything you want to add about OJ? We got a lot from Kurt. Anything you want to add?
Native son of San Francisco. Amazing actor for anybody who has ever seen Capricorn One. I have a theory, because OJ was first in the credits above Sam Waterston. I have a theory that OJ was just such a bad actor that they took all his lines away because he was first on the credits. But if you watch Capricorn One, you'll notice that OJ has like four lines the whole movie. It's always bad reaction shots. Sam Waterston says something and OJ will go, it's just like a lot of bad reaction shots. But I remember that OJ actually thought he actually had delusions that he was going to one day win an Academy Award. It was an actual goal of his, maybe for his work in The Naked Gun or something. Yeah. But he actually believed himself to be quite the thespian. But anyone who's seen Capricorn One knows that the guy couldn't even do a basic reaction shot.
The whole OJ thing, like OJ himself, it just like, it still makes me really sad that I feel like America had a lot of goodwill for him and put a lot of kind of like hope into him. And I mean, it really was when that shit all happened, it really was one of those things where you're just like, wow, like you had no idea who this guy was at all. Like, and just like, I mean, it was nuts in the way it captivated people, you know, for years and years. I remember being at work and people arguing about it, you know, like, oh, you know, no, OJ's innocent. No, OJ's guilty. It was just like, it was nuts.
Yeah. And wild because you know, Marv Albert bites the lady and nobody seems to care that much. Yeah. But OJ makes a big deal. Well, great job. Great job, both of you.
He did more than bite somebody's ass. I mean, let's be fair here.
Indeed.
I know.
Well, you know, I mean, it's delaying. Like Juice was, I mean, he was an All-American boy, you know? I mean, I had an O.J. Simpson Sports Illustrated Buffalo Bills, you know? Yeah. I mean, he was, after Jim Brown, he was like the second, this is back in the era of the running back, where running backs were the superstars. And after, he was the first, he's the biggest star in football since Jim Brown at that point. Who's rushing
man,
records.
Talk about Jim Brown. Jim Brown was great.
Wow. Better actor than OJ.
A better
everything than OJ. I mean, just imagine Jim Brown.
A better human being,
Indeed, definitely a better human being.
Great job, both of you on
OJ. All right, let's move it on. Let's go.
John, I'm giving you 3 points. I'm giving Kurt 2 points.
Okay.
Whoa. He deserves at least 3, too. I mean, if I get 3, he deserves 3.
Let's
You're
keep
gonna
going.
Get ejected
You're just
for,
trying to
for
keep
questioning.
This okay.
Yeah, questioning the ref. Sport. What's up with that? I feel like I'm watching the WWF now.
I just feel sorry for you. I want you to have points.
That's okay. I'll go along.
Hey, there's an opportunity coming up because it's time to play our second game. It's time for the Thunderdome.
Oh, yeah.
And this week in the Thunderdome, we have two remarkable NFL teams that both managed to go undefeated during the regular season. Only one of them went undefeated through the playoffs. We have the 1972 Miami Dolphins.
Miami Dolphins.
Versus the 2007 New England Patriots.
Indeed.
Who wins in a battle to the death in the Thunderdome?
Oh, the Dolphins, clearly. You got Greasy, you got Mercury Morris. I think a better all-around football team.
You got to be shitting me, dude. No way. The Patriots, I'm even going to take away the fact that there's 35 years difference, so there's obviously going to be a change in the physical skills and the size that if they actually played each other, it would be like the Patriots playing a high school team at that point. But
excuse me.
I'll even take that away.
Tom Brady would be on his ass,
dude.
And probably out of the game by the second quarter.
Dude,
there was
Randy
no
Moss. Dude, Randy Moss. Who was going to cover Randy Moss, dude? He's like 6 inches taller than any of the Dolphins' backs. The Patriots would win
Brady
that game.
Doesn't have 3 seconds to throw the football.
Miami.
I'm telling you, man.
That Miami team. I'll tell you what. Every year when that Miami team crows and pops their champagne, I think to myself, man, you guys are worse than so many teams. The great Cowboys teams, the great Steelers teams, the great Niners teams would all destroy that Miami team.
How many times that Dolphin team lose?
they got lucky, dude.
I'm telling you.
They got lucky, man. Come on, dude.
The conditioning is bigger.
Dude,
players
dude,
are bigger,
the Patriots,
stronger,
the 2007 Pats changes. Would win that game by like 8 touchdowns. It would literally be like playing a high school
team. Tom Brady is on the sideline by the second quarter. You put any NFL defense from the 70s or 80s in the modern era with nobody to protect the quarterback, where you could just maul that you just hit.
Why would that be how the rules would be? Why wouldn't they be the other way? In which case, Miami wouldn't be able to do anything. They just have to go home after like 30 seconds. Oh, shit.
Nah,
man.
3 yards in a cloud of dust. You got those big fat linemen, and you just hand the football
those
off.
Big fat linemen are the size of fullbacks in the modern NFL, dude.
You fucking elbow a guy in the ribs. Dude, you can do everything you want.
Those linemen are like 240 pounds.
The new players are tough. The old players were tough. These guys worked it. These guys worked in the shipyards in the offseason. These are tough motherfuckers. These players now are prima donna.
He's an old timey football guy. I would think he'd have more appreciation.
Yeah,
for
you want to solve the CTE problem? Make them wear leather helmets again.
Yeah,
that'll solve it.
That'll solve it. Quit knocking your head.
More CTE.
Let them have their
stupid
cocaine.
They hit each other because they got this fucking helmet.
Yep.
Counterintuitive, but that's how you solve CTE. Take the helmets off them.
Then they're gonna make smarter decisions. Yeah, you got to coach them different too. That's part of the thing. Is the coaching on tackling from a middle school level up is going to be
that's
part.
That's right. No but more hand signals.
Words. Yeah. Good one.
No more pictographs.
Hey, great job in the Thunderdome. I think you're both absolutely correct, but I think Kurt's slightly more correct. So I'm going to give him 3 points and woo-hoo! John 2 points.
Oh, good. I want to see him get some. What did I get? One?
You got two. You got 2 points, John.
Okay.
And mainly because, yes, like I think on one hand, I do admire there is a grit to the old way we played sports. Like in the same way that to go away from football, that I still would love to see like in their prime 80s Detroit Pistons play against like the Golden State Warriors now. Because, you know,
yeah,
Isaiah Thomas, fucking Lambeer are going to go in and they're just going to punch somebody. And that's going to be the end of shooting 3-pointers, right? Yeah. So there's that aspect to it.
I mean, it's a good parallel.
Yeah, but wouldn't you agree that those great teams of the 80s and 90s would clean up on the modern NBA where it's all about isolations and three balls? You think those guys could hang with the Pistons and the Jazz, clean up because the Sonics in the early 90s? All that muscle. These guys don't even know how to play the low post anymore.
The rules have changed. Don't,
you put a hand on them. You can't even hand check. So, I mean,
dude, LeBron would just pick up Bill Laimbeer with one hand and throw him into the audience. Nah. LeBron is a monster, dude.
Nah.
He could beat those Pistons teams 1-on-5.
Stop.
Oh shit.
I'm joking about that.
Will Chamberlain would fucking have his way
Will
with that.
Chamberlain
guy.
Was awesome. He was a physical freak though, dude.
Yeah, Will Chamberlain was 350 pounds, 20 reps.
And he might actually care if he was playing against some of the teams now. Because I think, I mean, the big thing with Wilt is like the last 8 years of his career, he was like, I'm the best guy. And I don't really, it's like, what? I'm going to play against all these white centers. Right. Like, who cares?
Right.
And so he just started.
Still the only guy to block the sky hook twice in one play, I saw it.
Right.
They were both probably goaltends, but.
Well, sure.
Kareem goes up right-handed. Wilt swats it. Kareem comes back left-handed. Wilt swats it. I think they were both goaltends, though.
Didn't Chamberlain end up with L.A.? Was that when Kareem was playing for the Bucks or?
Yeah, probably so.
Yeah.
Chamberlain
Kareem,
was Philadelphia early
Kareem
on, right? And then he went to L.A.?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a trip. Wouldn't that have been a trip to have Chamberlain and Kareem on the same team? Kareem playing power forward?
That's insane.
Whew,
man. That would have rivaled the Celtics for that era then. With that team, you would have won 12 straight championships too. So yeah, great job on the Thunderdome. You both did excellent. Now, from the makers of Pomme ou Pomme de Terre, it's La Chose Française Arbitraire. That's the arbitrary French thing, and the only thing that's French about it is the name. So I'm going to pose an arbitrary question to both of you.
Okay.
Given the history of lasting traumatic brain injury tied to football, the game will likely have to change within our lifetimes. How would you reformat the sport to keep the excitement and limit the life-altering physical abuse? We already heard John say, let's just put him back in the leather helmets. What else do we have?
Well, it's just going to more and more towards, it's going to be like flag football, and it's going to be like a track and field event. And it just, I'm gone at that point. I like the hitting. I like the physicality. I don't like to see a guy, you know, carried up on a stretcher. But again, I'm not joking when I say put the leather helmets back on.
Right.
I want it to be physical. I want to get back to rudimentary tackling, but they're not. They're going to go the opposite way. It's going to be all about protecting Pat Mahomes and DeAndre Hopkins, and it's
gonna
just going to be
football.
Passing for 450 yards a game.
Yep.
Your defensive back can't touch anybody.
I love it. I love it.
I don't think they're going to solve it.
I can't wait for a Super Bowl that ends like 72-63 or something like that. It's going to be awesome.
I'll take 16-9 any day.
Yeah. We talk about this, Nate, Johnny and I, we talk about football a lot during the season. And, you know, obviously we have our own teams, but, you know, we very much have different perspectives on the game. I mean, I love the games that are like where there are a lot of points scored and it's just like a track meet going up and down the field. Defensive scores are fun too, but just the hitting and the cloud of dust and stuff is not really my thing, but it is his. So, anyway, so now Is it my turn on this question?
Oh, yeah.
On
I mean, it's open. Like, you, yeah. Okay. Go for it.
Je parle que le football américain est un sportif très mal. Are you a French speaker, Nate?
Yeah, I mean, I've been teaching myself through Duolingo for a few years.
Okay, so I'm not okay. I'm just trying to gauge how much of an ass I'm making out of myself.
Oh no, I mean, I found that very charming because it's probably the kind of way I would assemble a sentence. It's good.
Unfortunately, I took French in high school and college, so I don't have a very good excuse. But I would continue with my French. You know, I'd say what we should do is go to flag football, maybe, and just let him get as drunk as possible first.
There you go.
But flag football, so
drug of choice. I mean, let's be open-minded about this. Just like smoke as much pot as you want. Let's just play some football, whatever.
Hey, man, I know where you guys are coming from. You know, that was just legalized here.
Oh yeah,
it just recently, but you can't buy it, of course.
You got to go to Jersey, I think. That's your closest place to buy weed.
No, it's D.C.
Oh,
no,
really? Oh, D.C.
You can get it, and I can get it delivered. I've been putting it off, though, I got to tell you. I smoked a fair amount of pot back in the day, so.
It's different now. It's definitely different. I mean, it's different compared to what I smoked in college.
It's a lot stronger, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's just, like, different stronger. It's, you know, it's way stronger the first week, and then after that, it's just kind of a different vibe.
Is it like acid now or what?
No. I mean, it's just, I don't know. Like I'm a person who.
It's more like getting hit on the head with an anvil for about 20 minutes.
Like a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Well, I just game. If I smoke that indica now, I'm just like,
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
You know, after about 20 minutes, I can function again, but nothing like acid.
Yeah, no, it's exactly that. Yeah. It'll be a thing where, like, if it hits me the right way, my wife will be talking to me about something and I literally cannot find the words to react in conversation to what she's saying for a period of time. And so I'll just kind of be like, yes, I care, but I can't, yeah. I can't even say anyway. Yeah. It's fun stuff.
Nice.
So yeah, more toward flag football. John, you feel like let's put those helmets, you know, let's put the leather helmets on. Let's encourage hitting the right way. Let's keep it beefy and malicious.
I want it to be football still, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, I don't, the game today, I mean, I don't know, all the PI flags and stuff like that. I mean, I saw a lot of the rule
What's
changes.
A PI? A private investigator? What?
Pass interference.
Oh, okay.
A lot of those rules were passed because of our secondary, the Seahawks secondary. Our big
DB
Sherman and Brandon Brown.
Let's not talk about the Legion of Boom here in terms of, yeah.
There was rule changes following that.
Different
that
brand of football, yeah.
Yeah, great. Great. I agree. I mean, I think the big thing is figuring out how to keep what works and not skew it too far. Because this is the problem with all sports. We talked about this a little bit with basketball. Like, basketball has come to a point where you can't even really make contact with anybody, so that the rules are now being bent to where shooters are forcing faux contact against a defender and they're getting and one penalties and shit like that. And the same sort of thing's happening with football. Like, quarterbacks are so protected now that there's really no incentive to not just, like, sling as much as you can. And if you've got legs, great, good for you. But it doesn't even matter that much.
It is true.
Because arguably, like, 43-year-old Tom Brady 10 years ago is not able to play for Tampa because he probably gets his ass handed to him by week 6. And he's like, I can't continue to play. I'm just too beat up. And it's a totally different game.
It's changed so much in 5 or 10 years. Yeah. I mean, look at Romo.
Yeah.
I mean, Romo was, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's definitely going to be an issue in assessing quarterbacks. Like, you know, you look at Roger Staubach or Bob Greasy or Terry Bradshaw, and their numbers look like a joke compared to people today. But Roger Staubach was awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the best ever, no question. But his numbers just,
you know, whose numbers don't look like a joke are Dan Marino's, man.
Yeah.
Dan Marino is underrated.
Yeah.
That guy was passing for, 4,600, 4,700 yards in an era where people were running the ball 35 times a game.
Yeah.
And there was no protections for quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Why didn't he ever get back to the Super Bowl?
I know.
Like, I always wonder that. Like, I mean, what a crazy career. Like,
yeah, no, that was a big bummer. I had a starting lineup figure of Dan Marino that was one of my cherished possessions because I loved him. He was my favorite quarterback aside from Elway at the time. And like, yeah, he's just
two words, Ray Finkel, man.
Yeah, right. Laces out.
Marino was great in fantasy football too. I had him as my quarterback a few seasons when I won it all, and he was. His whole career, he was good for fantasy football, definitely.
Well, hey, great job on La Chose Francaise Arbitraire. You're both getting 2 points.
No, no, no. I want more points. I used French.
Yeah, he should get 3. That's all right. Fine with me.
We're all right. Being so obnoxious. We're like disputing every call.
No, no.
I'm just waiting for real trivia so I can, put this away,
We're going to get thrown out, Evison. We're going to be in the penalty box.
What's more football than arguing the calls? So, Kurt, I'm going to give you 3 points. So that means that you are both now tied at 15 points. And we are going into the final topic of this week's episode. And as everyone who listens to this show knows, the final topic and winning a vague idea is for literally all the marbles, because I will be sending you cash on delivery, 4,700 pounds of brand new marbles that you must pay for. The driver is armed and instructed not to leave until you pay. So you are responsible to pay for those.
Okay.
But that means you won. So here we go. You're tied. We're going into the last topic. Whoever knows the most here is who's going to win. Or it could result in a non-football tie. I don't know. Oh. It could be a European football tie, because that happens on this show. All right.
So, what is a European football tie?
That's just the...
Quit stalling, Baumeister. You're just stalling now. I think the answer is... I'm gonna get all the points and answer the question before you ask it. The answer is Beatty Feathers, 1943. Am I right?
Yeah. No, okay. No, you're not. But I like that. I like the moxie.
I do. I like it too. That's a way to play.
So, John, we're gonna start with you. The final topic. Do you have a vague idea about a pooch punt?
I don't know. You mean a pooch kick?
Yeah, a pooch kick or a pooch punt? Sure.
Yeah, it's when you kick the football over the first line of special teams, whatever you're gonna call the special teams guys. It goes just over the thing and between the guys that are there to receive it and between they're not your gunners. I don't know whatever you call them on defense.
All right. Yeah.
It's when,
and oftentimes the person will do it like a drop kick as well, where it will bounce off the turf. Michael Dixon, who is an NFL punter from Australia, this is the punter that is going to change the game of football. Johnny Hecker is probably the greatest punter of all time after Ray Guy, but now Michael Dixon of the Seattle Seahawks is changing the game because he's a rugby kicker.
That's a rugby kick. All kinds of funny drop off kick, the off the kick. Yeah.
Every other punch inside the 10-yard line, he can put different spins on the ball. He's used to,
Is it rugby or Aussie rules football that he played? Is it rugby or Aussie rules football that he played?
I think both.
Just let me know when it's my turn, because I'm going to kill this.
Okay. I think it's your turn.
Oh, God. Here we go. All right.
Okay. A pooch kick or punt, it's both. Is when you take a dog or a chien, as they say in French, and the dog is hiked. Usually a small dog is used because they're more portable.
Your Pomeranians, and
so
your
a terrier, a dachshund, something like that, something with a little heft to him, but something also, you wrap him in a pillow so he doesn't get hurt, and you take him back and you run and there's a catapult waiting in the end zone, and you put the dog, the pooch, le chien, in the catapult, and you go and it goes, and that's what a pooch kick is.
I love it. Very good. Yeah, the The pooch punt is something that, I mean, John was closest in his definition. It is a strategical effort to avoid kicking to the returner because you fear that the kick returner is capable of scoring on you. So you kick it in between. It's usually tight ends are on the front of the special teams group.
Or gunners, as some might say.
Yeah, and then you got like your defensive backs and then whoever your returner is.
Or what
is.
You call your hands team.
Yeah.
Your hands, yeah, your hands team. You're all about the hands team, yeah.
Yeah, not to be confused with a handsy team, which is
yes,
totally indeed. Different problem. And in 2021, no longer acceptable. Nope. But yeah, it's a strategy to avoid having that kick returner return that kick. However, I mean, I love this idea of a dog catapult that is designed to, you know, just move that little guy over the field. I think that's,
I mean, he's got to be safe. He's got to have a helmet and some padding on, but
yeah.
I think it's good, you know.
And dogs always land on their feet, right? That's the common expression.
Right, dogs do. Yeah, definitely. Dogs.
Yeah.
Maybe
absolutely.
it should be a cat dressed as a dog dressed as a football.
And I like that a lot too. I like that the layers of pastiche there. Cat dressed as a dog dressed as a football. that's in a Don DeLillo book, right? Sometime he wrote that. So yeah. Hey, great job on Pooch Punt. John, I'm going to give you 2 points. And Kurt, I'm going to give you 1 point. I loved your answer, but technically not correct. And that means that Jonathan Evison is the winner of this week's episode of A Vague Idea. So congratulations to you, John.
Good job, Chief.
What would you like to
plug? Yeah, but I didn't speak any French, man.
Yeah, well,
you spoke French.
I'm a little more erudite. What can I say? But you will receive those marbles.
So what would you like to plug? What do you want people who are listening to the show to do, watch, buy, listen to, something like that? What are you feeling?
I don't care. you can buy my book, so that's fine.
Okay.
You know?
You want me to do the plug
do,
for
man.
You?
I'm not, you know.
I can do
I'm
the plug for Evison.
I'm here to talk about football. I got 8 books or 7 or 8 books out there. My name is Evison, Evison. Look it up. Find out which one looks good for you. And yeah, sure. Go ahead and buy it. I don't know. I don't want to plug it's not my style. I like second.
You don't have to.
Plug Kurt's book.
He's pretty low
I'm
key.
Reading Twilight of the Gods and it's very unique.
Great.
Thank you. That's
plugging
good
Kurt's
too.
Book is fine too. Yeah, that's great. All right.
Yeah, that's what I was going to do anyway. I was going to plug my own book and instead of Evison's. I was going to lie basically.
Well, yeah. So there you go. That way you can feel like you won, Kurt, even though
I know. It was the only thing that mattered and you stole it from me. You took it from me in spite of using French and coming up with fun stories about cats being kicked.
Kurt, is there anything you would like to plug? I'm sorry you didn't win this week, but you put up a great effort.
I want to come back. I want to come back sometime on your D&D podcast, man.
Oh,
or this
yes.
one or whatever.
That would be great.
Your D&D podcast looks insane. So I'll plug that a little bit.
I got a 14th level cleric.
I'm plugging. What's that? What did Evison say?
He said he's got a 14th level cleric, and it's hard to get a character past like 10th
Evison to 11th
is
a D&D
level.
Guy? No.
Fuck no. That's the only thing I know how to say. I got hot and heavy
That's
into
pretty
it.
Pretty good,
like
man. 14th
like
level cleric.
I bought the monster manual. I bought demigods and deities. I bought all the books. I got a fucking ream of graph paper. I got all the little pewter figurines. And after like 2 weeks, it's like I want to go through a fucking baseball, man.
Yeah.
But I did get hot and heavy into it. My son is getting all into Warhammer now. So we've been like painting the pewter figurine.
Nice.
Warhammer is intense. Cool figurines.
Yeah.
Intense game. Yeah.
It's cool stuff, man.
Right on.
So yeah, that was my favorite subject in high school, D&D.
It's a good subject. It's real good.
Yeah. Really prepared me well for college.
Yeah. So yeah.
I'm not really Evison's gone again, but I'll plug his books, of which I've read a few. Their titles are still in progress, but the one that's coming out soon, I read an early draft of that when it had a different title, and that's going to be great. It's going to be a huge book. It has a great title, obviously, but it's a massive like American novel that's going to be a really big deal. And I recently read I recently read another book by him that was a Western that he's just wrapping up. That's excellent. And of course, I'll plug my own books. So you can buy Pax Americana somewhere. It's a satirical spy thriller. And I'm working on, I'm just about done with Twilight of the Gods, which is a modern, kind of modern mythology. It's a book about Loki.
Oh, cool.
And in the modern world.
We could use a trickster now for sure. So I'm into that.
Yeah, the trickster. Yeah, he is. He's tricky. All right.
Well,
and Epson's back.
And I will say, Kurt, thank you so much because you did gift me a copy of Pax digitally.
I hope you enjoy it. I hope you get a chance to check it out.
I cannot wait to dig into it. One of the great burdens of having way too many projects is that I never have any time to do anything I want to do. But
I know that, man.
But I am so psyched to read it because it really, you know, I'm so big into kind of speculative sci-fi slash alternate reality stuff, and it just seems right up my alley. So I'm very psyched to check it out. So yeah, thank you both again for being on the show this week.
Thank you so much, Nate. That was great, man.
This
has
been a lot of fun. Listeners, if you like this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. That really helps us out. You can also check out all of our social media imprint. We have a Facebook group. We have a Facebook page that covers all four of the podcasts on the A Vague Idea Podcast Network. So there's this show. There's Roll for Blank, our actual play Dungeons & Dragons podcast. There is Hard Pick Mining Company, our Denver Nuggets podcast. And Funky Spunk, our Sex in the City podcast. And if you like those shows, check them out.
You have
They're
a
all
Denver
really good.
Nuggets podcast?
We do, yeah. Yeah, my buddy
you
Rex
have a Denver
hosts that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. So they get deep
you
into...
You ever have Dan Issel on as your guest?
Oh, man. We should try to get Dan Issel.
Dan Issel?
I bet he's not super busy. We could get
him. Dan Issel?
I remember that,
Skywalker
dude.
Skywalker while you're at it. Get David
oh,
Thompson
yeah.
on there.
Yeah. Is David Thompson around? Is still with us?
David Thompson was awesome.
Yeah. He was
the
he
Skywalker.
Was and like the great, one of the great lost potential stories of the 70s to early 80s NBA because of cocaine. Sad.
Is that what did
yeah,
him
well,
in?
Yeah, well, lost potential. I mean, the guy was a perennial all-star there for 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
I think he won a couple of, at least one scoring title.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, he was phenomenal. He could have been better, I think. And it's just that, you know, he shaved 4 or 5 years off his career with the coke and everything.
Kind of like Sean Kemp with the maternity suits.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the cheeseburger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. If Kemp hadn't gained a bunch of weight, like, if he managed to stay with the Sonics and lead them, like, who knows? We might still have the Sonics, that's still the great tragedy.
That guy had like 16 or 17 maternity suits going at one time.
Yeah.
Now he owns a pot shop in Seattle, but it turns out he's still getting screwed. You know, he's only got like 5% of the actual store.
He's getting cheated out of a pot shop?
Man.
Yeah, no, it's kind of known as his pot shop, but it turns out he's only got like about a 5% stake in it. He's just kind of the face of it. So it's pretty lame.
Yeah, you just got it's tragic because a lot of athletes, NBA or not, we find to have just like bad friends and bad advisors, and they get themselves into these sorts of situations.
It's the Leon Spinks story, man.
Yeah. Oh, man.
The guy won like $12 million, and then he started wrapping cars around telephone poles every weekend. And
yeah, we have all had a vague idea about football, and that's a good thing because the devil is in the details.
Oh, yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
See you, Kurt.
See you guys. See you, thank you so much.
Thank you. This was great. Thank you so much, guys.
A Vague Idea is written and produced by me, Nate Regolia, with Shannon Page, and sometimes John Perros. Information about topics often come from Wikipedia, so hey, why not donate a bit to that? Sound effects are Creative Commons public domain. If you like this podcast, tell a few people, and subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. And if you happen to like reading science fiction, check out the small press I started with my friend Sean Grokowski. You can find Spaceboy books at readspaceboy.com.